Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery. If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of the hunt. But are you getting the thrill of the best deals? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores, like Urban Outfitters, Fenty Beauty, and Expedia. And even stack sales on top of cash back. It's easy to use, and you get your cash back through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Today was the final day of the Supreme Court's current term, and I gotta say, thank God. This must be how the Jets feel when halftime finally arrives. All right, well, at least we get 15 minutes while they can't kick our asses.
From 30 Rockefeller Plaza in New York City, please enjoy this podcast edition of Late Night with Seth Meyers. On today's show, Seth chats with Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren. But first, a closer look.
The January 6th hearings have provided a mountain of new evidence about the relentless, all-encompassing plan by Donald Trump and his cronies to overturn the 2020 election. But maybe the biggest revelation so far has been the degree to which the people involved in the scheme all had criminal intent and knew what they were doing was against the law. For more on this, it's time for a closer look. Look, I'm not especially hopeful that the January 6th hearings are going to magically change the minds of any hardcore Trump fans in the Republican Party. I mean, I hope they do, but we've been through a seven-year-long onslaught of Trump scandals, including two impeachments, a violent coup, and a sex scandal in which he paid hush money during a presidential campaign to cover up an affair with a porn star and lied about it up until the point where the actual check he personally wrote to make the payment surfaced with his signature on it. And the way you know that's Donald Trump's signature is that he looks like he signed it with a giant Sharpie while he was whitewater rafting. Remember that whole thing? Looking back, now I have to say, I always imagined hush money would be paid in a more covert way than writing and signing a check. That was more like yell money. I just assumed from movies it would be an envelope full of unmarked bills passed between parked cars down at the docks. I never would have imagined Trump sitting down to balance his check but going through all the hush money payments. All right, let's see, $150 for the cable bill. That's fair. I watch a lot of cable. $300 for groceries. Eat a lot of groceries. Let's see, $130,000 to adult film star to cover up sex scandal. More than fair as well. Mel? Mel, honey, do you have any hush money payments you need me to make? No, because I'm doing the bill, and if you have hush money, I'd love to. Why? Because I don't want to pay late fees. Mel, I don't want to be the only frugal one in this relationship, Mel. None of that really seemed to move the needle with Republicans, so I'm not optimistic the January 6th hearings are going to seriously influence the GOP. But I am hopeful the hearings will influence prosecutors in the Justice Department, because one area where these hearings have been shockingly successful has been establishing criminal intent and a consciousness of guilt among Trump and his gang of pro-coup weirdos as they were planning and orchestrating the coup. Take disgraced former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn, who participated in discussions where, among other things, he pushed Trump to use the military to seize voting machines. Flynn invoked the Fifth Amendment during a series of what you would think would be pretty straightforward questions for any non-fascists.
Do you believe the violence on January 6th was justified morally?
Take the Fifth.
You believe the violence on January 6th was justified legally?
Yes.
General Flynn, do you believe in the peaceful transition of power in the United States of America?
The fifth.
You're pleading the fifth over a hypothetical that has nothing to do with the law? The Fifth Amendment doesn't work like that. It's not Family Feud. It doesn't say you have the right to pass after you buzz in. It protects you from self-incrimination. And look, I'm generally very opposed to drawing in conclusions about someone's guilt just because they plead the fifth. It's a constitutional right, and it's in there for a reason. These are just benign hypotheticals. This is like if your spouse said, how do you feel about monogamy? And your answer was, I'm invoking my Fifth Amendment right not to answer any questions about your sister. It's not gonna end the conversation. That's how aware these guys were that they were in legal trouble. They wouldn't even answer questions about whether they believe in the peaceful transfer of power. In fact, at almost every turn, key White House officials made it very clear that they knew they were in significant legal jeopardy. For example, on Tuesday, former Trump White House official Cassidy Hutchinson recounted in a damning comment from Trump's White House counsel, Pat Cipollone, after he found out that Trump wanted to go to the Capitol himself and lead the armed mob in overthrowing the election results.
We understand, Ms. Hutchinson, that you also spoke to Mr. Cipollone on the morning of the 6th as you were about to go to the rally on the Ellipse. And Mr. Cipollone said something to you like, make sure the movement to the Capitol does not happen. Is that correct?
That's correct. I saw Mr. Cipollone right before I walked out onto West Exec that morning. And Mr. Cipollone said something to the effect of, please make sure we don't go up to the Capitol, Cassidy. Keep in touch with me. We're going to get charged with every crime imaginable if we make that movement happen.
And do you remember which crimes Mr. Cipollone was concerned with?
In the days leading up to the 6th, we had conversations about potentially obstructing justice or defrauding the electoral count.
It's amazing. We're going to get charged with every crime imaginable. It's truly mind-boggling to me that none of these guys are in jail yet when they themselves were expecting to end up in jail. Merrick Garland still poring over transcripts looking for a smoking gun. Meanwhile, on January 6th, Trump aides were all on Pinterest searching for ways to accessorize your orange jumpsuit. Oh, cool! It says you can bedazzle your handcuffs! And crucially, that comment from Cipollone was not just a one-time freakout on January 6th. As Hutchinson made clear in that clip, there were conversations even before January 6th about the likelihood that Trump aides were committing, among other crimes, obstruction of justice or defrauding the electoral count. Think about that. They even named the specific laws they were breaking. They literally laid out a blueprint for prosecutors to arrest them. I mean, how much easier can you make it? This is like if on every page, Waldo was holding up a giant sign that said, I'm right here, you idiot. And that was not the only time a White House lawyer warned Trump cronies that they were breaking the law. For example, there was also Eric Hirschman, whose job, it seems like, was basically to tell everyone in the Trump White House they were constantly breaking the law. Now, you might remember Hirschman from previous hearings as the guy who has a baseball bat with the word justice written on it hanging on his wall. I like that it's not mounted on wood or in a glass case or anything. It's just right there on hooks at grabbing height. I'll bet when people got their lunches out of the office fridge at his firm, they triple-checked they had the bag right. Hirschman was in a meeting with another key figure in the attempted coup, Justice Department official Jeffrey Clark. Clark wanted Trump to make him attorney general after the election so that as attorney general, Clark could declare without evidence that there was fraud in the election and then overturn the results. And Hirschman had very blunt words for Clark when he found out about Clark's plan.
When he finished discussing what he planned on doing, I said, good. Excuse me, sorry, a-hole. Congratulations, you just admitted a first step or act you take as attorney general would be committing a felony.
I like that the guy has enough decorum not to curse in a deposition, but still keeps a baseball bat in the frame just to keep everyone on edge. I wish it could have been a fly on the wall for all his conversations in the White House. If you break the law, I'm going to use this baseball bat and beat the living out of you. Sorry, the living F out of you, please. Please excuse my horrible manners, you dumb piece of. So yet again, we have a Trump White House official making it plain as day that the people planning the coup knew they were breaking the law when they were doing it. For example, we also know from testimony given by a former aide to Mike Pence that John Eastman, the pro-coup lawyer who wrote the memo detailing how Pence was supposed to overturn the results on January 6th, also knew his plan was illegal. Eastman admitted in the Oval Office in front of Trump that his plan would violate the Electoral Count Act. And after the whole thing descended into violence and chaos on the 6th, Hirschman, the baseball bat guy, again offered a very stark warning to Eastman.
It was the day after. Eastman, I don't remember why he called me. He texted me or called me, wanted to talk with me, and he said he couldn't reach others. And he started to ask me about something dealing with Georgia and preserving something potentially for appeal. And I said to him, are you out of your effing mind? Right? I said, I only want to hear two words coming out of your mouth from now on. Orderly transition. And I screamed and said, I don't want to hear any other effing words coming out of your mouth, no matter what, other than orderly transition. Repeat those words to me. And I screamed that. Eventually he said, orderly transition. I said, good, John. Now I'm going to give you the best free legal advice you're ever getting in your life. Get a great effing criminal defense lawyer. You're going to need it. And then I hung up on him.
Man, where did this guy get his law degree? Does Yale Law School have a building on campus called the Pauli Walnuts Memorial Law Library? The only problem with that library, it's great, but as soon as you learn something there, you forget about it. And as we've also discovered from these hearings, Trump's cronies had such a clear consciousness of guilt that a lot of them were asking for preemptive pardons. They knew they could be prosecuted, and they wanted Trump to get them off the hook before that happened.
Were you involved in or did you witness any conversations about the possibility of a blanket pardon for everyone involved in January 6th?
I had heard that mentioned, yeah.
Dr. Eastman emailed Rudy Giuliani and requested that he be included on a list of potential recipients of a presidential pardon.
And are you aware of any members of Congress seeking pardons?
I guess Mr. Gates and Mr. Brooks, Mr. Gates was personally pushing for a pardon, and he was doing so since early December.
Did Rudy Giuliani ever suggest that he was interested in receiving a presidential pardon related to January 6th?
He did.
And Ms. Hutchison, did White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows ever indicate that he was interested in receiving a presidential pardon related to January 6th?
Mr. Meadows did seek that pardon, yes, ma'am.
How do you know that Congressman Gates asked for a pardon?
He told me.
Tell us about that.
He told me he'd ask Meadows for a pardon.
At this point, it's easier to ask who wasn't looking for a pardon. Mr. President, here's a list of the people who want pardons. Mark Meadows, Rudy Giuliani, Matt Gaetz, John Eastman, the White House chef, the janitor, and that kid who mowed the lawn. Do you remember him? Yeah, he needs a pardon. I guess he maybe stole that lawnmower. I also love the fact that Matt Gaetz was just going around telling people he asked for a pardon like it was cool and not incriminating. Although Gaetz does seem like a guy who doesn't know what he says makes him look bad. Hey, Jeff was saying cold water makes his ween look small, but I was like, dude, mine looks small no matter what temperature the water is. Am I right? Am I right? Hirschman, am I right? Shut the f*** up. Shut the F up. These hearings have sent a clear message to prosecutors in the Justice Department. Not only is there sufficient evidence to charge Trump and his cronies with multiple crimes, there's also sufficient evidence that they were aware they were potentially committing crimes at the time that they were orchestrating the attempted coup. If you are, say, a Republican or Trump supporter watching these hearings and you come to the conclusion that everything these guys did was legal and above board, then I'm sorry, you're a...
Excuse me, sorry, a-hole.
This has been A Closer Look.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code AUDIO to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code AUDIO at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code AUDIO.
Our guest tonight is a United States Senator from Massachusetts. Please welcome back to the show, Senator Elizabeth Warren. Welcome to the show, Senator. Well, it has been a week of historic news. Not all good, most bad, but let's start with a silver lining. Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson becomes the first black woman on the Supreme Court.
Yes. You know our other first? She is the first public defender to sit on the United States Supreme Court.
That?
And think about, just for 1 second, think about what that means. This is a woman who has made public service her life and who is so committed to the principles of justice that she made her work about speaking up for people who couldn't afford to have lawyers, who weren't going to have a voice, except for someone like her who stepped in and said, that's my job and I'm going to be part of making this justice system work. She's going to be fabulous.
That's a really interesting point, because I think we often talk about the homogeny of like how the backgrounds and sort of the racial backgrounds or the you know, the gender backgrounds.
Yep.
But really, that's such an interesting point, because everybody comes from it from the same side of the law. And of course, the law is multifaceted. So that'll be great to have that new perspective.
That's right. We have had a lot of people who came from the side of all those corporations who desperately needed help. And now it's really terrific to have, it's kind of amazing, it took us this long, right, that we have our first public defender. She's going to be terrific.
Unfortunately, it seems like a lot of her role will be to be one of three people on the side of 6-3 decisions. You know, we had another one today about emissions. Basically, the court ruled that the EPA is very limited in the sort of emissions they can regulate from different plants. What are the grander implications of a decision like this?
So look, this is a Supreme Court that is basically out of control. And they have decided that they don't like the way that we have for decades now tried to deal with climate change. This has been a very pro-corporate court. And this is actually not the first decision in that direction. They've been anti-union. They've been anti-consumer. They've empowered corporations more than ever before, giving them religious liberty rights, letting them contribute money to influence the political process. And I see this as just, this is one more decision heaped on losing Roe versus Wade, heaped on a gun decision that is going to make life more dangerous for all of our children, for all of our neighbors, for all of our loved ones. It really is a time when the American people are losing confidence in the Supreme Court, and for good reason. A court that is not grounded in law, not grounded in the principles on which we have tried to build a country going forward, but instead a court that says, no, they're just going to substitute their own personal views and make the rest of America bend to it.
So this is a time where I feel like, and you must be hearing this a lot from your constituents, from the people you talk to, it seems like there's two reactions you could have, which is to be sad or to be angry. Do you feel like one is more helpful than the other?
Yes.
Okay.
Sad, you got a few hours for that.
Okay.
I will go as much as 24.
2 to 24 hours.
And that's it. That's it. 2 to 24 hours. And after that, cold bucket of water. Because now it is time to be angry and to channel that anger into action. And the reason for that is sad is about leaning back and giving up. And we can't do that. There is a path out of this. It is not an easy path. It is not a guaranteed win. But I guarantee this, you don't get what you don't fight for. So it is powerfully important to take the anger over what the Supreme Court has done and channel it into action. Can we do the actions?
Let's do the actions.
All right, let's do it right now on Roe. The first one is there are people out there right now who are pregnant and who need help. They need protection. And we need to pour resources into helping them. That means each of us volunteering money, volunteering time to support the organizations that are trying to help people. The administration is stepping in using all of its tools. And I commend the president for stepping up, for example, on medication abortion, making that more widely available, protecting people who have to cross state lines in order to get help. We should be looking at the fact that the federal government, biggest employer in the country, make sure that people have got time off from work and resources to travel. So we need to do things to protect people who are pregnant now and who get pregnant next month and the next month, because this is the urgent problem in front of us. But second thing we need to do is we got to focus like a laser on the election in November. Understand, this small minority that wanted to overturn Roe has been disciplined. They have worked at this for nearly 5 decades. They lost and they got back up and they stayed in the fight. And they helped all of those senators who helped shepherd through these justices who swore until the world looked level that Roe was settled law and that we don't disturb settled law. And as soon as they got the votes, they went ahead and did not just a chip away at Roe, just blew the whole thing up. We need to be just as committed, just as focused on this election in November. Two senators, if we pick up two Democratic senators who will help us get rid of the filibuster, which the president has now said he's on board for that, and who will give us Roe versus Wade, two senators, and yes, John Fetterman, I am looking at you in Pennsylvania. Yes, Mandela Barnes, I'm looking at you in Wisconsin. We get those two senators in, we hang on to the House, and Roe versus Wade will be the law all across America. That's what we can get done. That's a fight worth having.
I think it's important, and I appreciate the optimism. What do you say to people who feel as though maybe Democratic leadership did get caught a little flat-footed? It did feel like this was coming for 50 years. Now, maybe nobody thought it was going to happen, but we've certainly known for the last few months, based on the leaked draft, this was coming. And it did seem like it took, you know, the White House maybe 6 days to come out sort of with their plan. Why wasn't there a plan in place? Or was there, and it was just slow to come out?
Look, I think what matters is that we are using every tool in the toolbox and doing everything we can to protect people who are pregnant right now and need help. But understand this. We have every single Republican in the United States Senate and the House has voted against Roe versus Wade. We actually had this, nobody quite remembers this, just a few weeks ago. We actually voted this in the Senate, and every Republican said nope on Roe versus Wade. You know what? We got elections coming up. We need to hold every Republican accountable for those votes.
I have a lot more to ask you. We will be right back with more from Senator Elizabeth Warren. Welcome back to Late Night. We're here with Senator Elizabeth Warren. You are a former Harvard Law professor. How would you grade the legal argument that was presented for overturning Roe v. Wade?
Oh, bad.
Yeah.
But, you know, I want to say bad, not just...
Real quick, before we go, were you a tough grader?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
So just know, if she gives it an F, Clarence Thomas, it's probably a D from somebody else.
But it's still a D.
Okay, yeah.
It's still bad. Here's what really... One of the things that really troubles me about the way this opinion was written. You know, when you're out there to change something that has been precedent for half a century, you would expect to read an opinion that really is as grounded in law as you could possibly make it, that talks about the restrictions, what you can't do, and ultimately really tries to persuade. This opinion doesn't do any of that. This opinion basically cites a bunch of folks from the 1700s and says, boy, that's the way we want to go. Oh, I'm sorry, to a time when aristocrats ran the world, when the only people who had voices were white men, and when slavery was a way for people to make money. That's not the America we're trying to build going forward. And the fact that this opinion was just such an in-your-face about people who are truly going to be hurt from it, people whose lives are going to be turned upside down, people who are poor, who are not going to have the opportunity to leave and get to another state. Women of color who already have the highest maternal mortality rates. 14-year-olds who have been raped by their coaches. Mamas who are already working three jobs to try to take care of the families they've got. This opinion had nothing about the human impact of what it means to take away the decision that a woman makes about continuing a pregnancy and to insert instead the government just to come in callously and make the decision instead of the person who is pregnant. It troubles me to think how six people could say they have seized power and care so little about the people who will pay the price.
You know, there's been a lot of talk about the steps you could take to, you know, maybe change the direction of the court, things like stacking the court, things like term limits. We talked about abolishing the filibuster. These are things that, when they're brought up, oftentimes people categorize as extremist positions. I certainly understand they sound extreme. Do you think that as people watch the court take such extreme steps and make decisions that roll back precedent 50 years, do you think those extreme steps seem less extreme to people now?
I think that what we're watching is how many more people see this as an extremist court and see the kind of conditions that this tiny group of radicals are trying to impose on the rest of the country and the kind of threat they pose to all of us with a decision on guns, with a decision on abortion, with a decision on climate. Now, I think that means the first thing we have to do is remind ourselves the Supreme Court doesn't get the final word. The final word rests with we the people. And that's why it's so important at this moment to be angry, but to be focused in on that election in November. Two senators hang on to the House.
You're making it very easy to follow.
And we've got this. But it's so important because, Seth, understand this. If we don't do that, they've already told us the direction they're headed in. They're not stopping at Roe. You didn't hear them at the end of this say, oh, we got Roe, the climate, and guns, we're done. No, Clarence Thomas already said, we're coming after the LGBTQ community. We are coming after contraception. We are coming after what people do in the privacy of their own homes and their intimate and family lives. They are coming after the things we hold dear. And when you connect that up with what's happened with the January 6th insurrection, it's not an exaggeration to say our democracy is truly at stake. If the Republicans can seize power, they have made it clear that they stand behind Donald Trump, who wanted to be a dictator, tried really hard to get there, and got really close. What scares me is next time around, they're going to figure out how to succeed at that. And that's why what we do in November is so important.
I want to try to end on a little bit more optimism. We've got the 4th of July coming. Are you at least going to give yourself a break and barbecue?
You know, a little barbecue, a little hiking.
Oh, wow.
But you got to be back in the fight the next day.
Yeah.
Sorry. That's how everything turns right now.
Seems like you've 24 hours is about all the time you'll give anybody to do anything. Yeah.
Yeah, that's
kind not
of
fighting.
Limit. That's kind of the limit. That's kind of
the limit. Hey, thank you so much for being here, Senator. It's always a pleasure. Senator Elizabeth Warren, everybody.
Late Night with Seth Meyers airs weeknights on NBC at 12:35, 11:35 Central. Original music on the Late Night podcast is by the HE Band. Don't forget to follow the handle Late Night Seth on social media and tell your friends to subscribe to the Late Night podcast wherever they get their podcasts.
I love a good parasocial relationship with a celebrity who will probably never know my name.
I mean, honestly, who knows? Don't count yourself out. But my favorite part about these feuds is how they're ignited by the tiniest things.
Jada, I love you. G.I. Jane 2, can't wait to see it.
I accidentally laminated my brows too much.
It starts small and then it gets so big.
To be honest, Naomi, I'm fearful of you to this day.
I don't know her.
We all just have to admit, we're addicted. Everybody has opinions. Everyone picks sides.
Leave Britney Spears alone right now.
From Wondery, I'm Sydney Battle.
And I'm Matt Bellassai.
And this is Dis and Tell, la, 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 where we unpack why we get so invested in these feuds and whether or not our attention only makes the whole thing worse.
Follow Dis and Tell wherever you get your podcasts.